Hello, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
Habemus Papam.
The Roman Catholic Church has a new pope, and he's from Chicago.
I thought I sure still think that I did the right thing, and I would continue to. I'd do it again if I had to.
And just hours after former Governor George Ryan's funeral, we talk with two former inmates that Ryan took off of death row. First off tonight, after just 2 days of the conclave, the Roman Catholic Church has a new leader, and he's from Chicago. In a surprise announcement, the group of 133 cardinals elected Chicago-born missionary Robert Prevost to be the first American pope in the church's 2,000-year history. The 69-year-old member of the Augustinian religious order will be known as Pope Leo XIV. Here's a bit of his first speech to the crowd in St. Peter's Square earlier today.
Dio vi ama tutti.
God loves everyone.
E il male non prevarrà.
Evil will not
Siamo
prevail.
Tutti nelle mani
we
di
are all
Dio.
In the hands of God.
Pertanto, senza paura,
so without fear,
uniti,
united,
mano nella mano con Dio,
hand in hand,
e tra di noi,
with God and among ourselves,
andiamo avanti.
We go forward.
Joining us now with their reactions are Father Patty Gilger, Assistant Professor of Sociology at Loyola University Chicago, Paula McQuaid, a Professor of English and Catholic Studies at DePaul University, Heidi Schlumpf, a journalist with the National Catholic Reporter, and Scott Alexander, the Director of the Interschool Doctor of Ministry Program at Catholic Theological Union. Welcome, all of you. Welcome back. I know some of you were just here yesterday.
Thank you.
So thank you for the quick turnaround.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. So, Paula, what was your reaction to seeing Robert Prevost's election as Pope?
I was stunned. And then in short order, I was very happy. I think the Cardinals have done. I'm cautiously optimistic for the person that they've chosen. I'm also quite frankly stunned that he was from Chicago and American. No, I don't think anyone expected that.
We joke about the bingo cards. Nobody had this
right.
One of the bingo cards this year. Going into the conclave, though, the chances of an American, as you said, of an American being selected seems slim. Why is that? Why was that?
What I have heard is some version of you can't have it all, right? You can't be a superpower, you can't be an economic superpower, a political superpower, and be Pope, right? And it was just sort of that calculus, but it's not true, evidently. And I also just think we are living maybe in an earlier world where there was a lot of prejudice against American sort of power. And I think I think the Cardinals saw their way beyond that and have really made a really compelling and interesting choice.
Anyone else want to weigh in on that? Why an American couldn't have been Pope until now?
Well, I was going to say he was on our bingo card, so he was on the list of front runners at the National Catholic Reporter. But I think one of the reasons he maybe made it is because he's described as the least American of the American cardinals. So even though he was born and raised here in the Chicago area, he spent most of his adult life in ministry in South America and in Italy. So he's more of a global citizen for a global church.
Heidi, tell us a little bit more about that and about his experience and his work with the church over the years.
Yeah, so he grew up here in Chicago and went to the Catholic school and a parish here, but he eventually joined the Augustinian religious order and went as a missionary to Peru and was doing ministry down there. He came back to Chicago a couple times in the late 80s and early 90s to do some stuff for his religious order, and then back to Peru, and then eventually to the Curia, where he held several offices, most recently the very prominent office for the dicastery or office for the bishops.
Father Gilger, what do you think of the history that has been made with the selection of the first American pope?
You know, I don't know what I make of it. I still feel, my heart is not settled down yet from being able to receive the gift of his word, so all I can really say is that where my attention goes when I have a moment of quiet or when I'm not reading the news or watching something else from him, where it's really going these days is back to his words that he spoke from the balcony. And mm-hmm. I'm just picking up like hints of the tone of his voice, the way his face looked, that the first words out of his mouth were, "Peace be with you. Peace be with all of you." And that was emphasized a number of times during what he said. But he also mentioned a number of other things that I think are really important. Dialogue, bridge building, yes. Walking with, attention to the margins. He was very clearly picking up many of the themes from Francis's papacy and saying, these are still things that the Roman Catholic Church is going to hold at the center of its own attention, its own heart. The last thing I'll say there is that he was doing that clearly with Pope Francis. He mentioned Francis by name, mentioned synodality by name, but he also brought in, I think, key themes from the previous four popes as well that are really subtle, but also deeply rooting, grounding. He's synthesizing, I think, some of the gifts that our previous popes had.
Yeah, and I definitely want to go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just want to get in really quick. The other person he quoted really interestingly was Augustine, right? Mm-hmm. He's an Augustinian, right. And he quoted Augustine saying, I am with you as a Christian, but I will serve you as a bishop. And Augustine was very famously a very reluctant bishop who cried during his ordination as being a bishop because he didn't want to do it so badly. So he's basically saying, I am doing this as an act of service. This is not sort of my advancement. I see myself as a servant of you.
And if I could just say, I think that the fact that he's American might be a counterpoint in the sense that I think he's going to prove that being an American is not essential to being Pope. Nationality is not essential to being Pope. And it might be a way of sort of destroying the notion that national identity matters first when you're part of the universal church.
He and we talked about, you know, being in Chicago, and Mayor Brandon Johnson, he tweeted in response to the news, quote, everything dope, including the Pope, comes from Chicago. We know that he is borrowing from another favorite Chicagoan, our TikTok historian, Sherman Dilla Thomas. Scott, what does this mean for the local Chicago Catholic community?
Well, I'm sure the local community is thrilled, but I'm absolutely certain that we're thrilled at Catholic Theological Union because the Pope Leo is an alumnus of our institution. And so today, the entire school was just rejoicing, you know, over the fact that we have a man as leader of the Universal Church who seems truly up to the job and qualified, but that who's someone who's deeply connected to our community here. And it just makes us feel even more connected to the Universal Church.
Heidi, Pope Leo is, as we've discussed, an American, but he also speaks, he addressed the crowd in Italian and Spanish. We know that he speaks several other languages. He spent, as you mentioned, many years working in Peru and Rome. Tell us about, and you've kind of mentioned it, Scott, what influence do you think this international background will have?
Well, I think it was key to him being elected. So especially when we saw the news coming on the fourth vote. I was surprised it was an American, but I was also surprised it was a little earlier than I had expected. And I think that shows that the cardinal electors came together and agreed on him as a candidate rather quickly. So I think he was seen in some ways as not too extreme in either side, someone who would continue some of the things that Francis started, but he's not Francis II. He's going to be his own man and do things maybe in his own way.
Let's talk a little bit about, you know, his relationship with Francis. Scott, what do we know about that relationship?
Well, what we know is that in 2014, Pope Francis sent him explicitly back to Peru to be missionary, and he was appointed bishop there. I don't want to suggest that Pope Francis was grooming him for the papacy. I don't think Pope Francis thought in those terms. But I do think Pope Francis's connection to all the people at the margins and solidarity with the poor, it was central to his understanding of what a pastor is about and indeed what the mission of the church is about. And so I think that experience in Peru and then coming back to Rome, being placed in the position of the Dicastery of Bishops, which means he plays a very important role in selecting new bishops around the world. And as you probably know, this conclave, you know, had, you know, the 71 nations around the world represented, right? Which I think is more than the previous conclave, at least 20 or 25 more than the previous conclave, right? So I think, in a sense, the message here is that Prevost is a missionary, right? And that he's a man of the world. Not simply an American. And maybe what he'll show the world is how Americans can be servants of the world and servants of the oppressed and marginalized, rather than perhaps how we're perceived as dominating the world and dominating the oppressed and marginalized.
Father Gilger, you all talked about front runners yesterday. Pope Leo was not on that list. What do you think led to his selection?
I think that what we've discussed here really is close to the heart of the matter. So one of the things that you mentioned, Heidi, that I think is right on point is I would have guaranteed very little about what was going to happen in this conclave. Except if you would have pressed me, I really would have guaranteed we were not going to have a pope by Thursday. Like, we're going to need more time. And the time, like, because there are so many new people who were there. Yes, they knew each other at the synod, but there's so many people who needed to get to know one another and talk about what the church really needed. I thought, okay, no way. I can rest easy for Thursday at least before we have to do some more things on Friday. But there, this quick arrival really shows that this man was offering something in his own personality, in his relationship with these other cardinals, in the way he was able to navigate some of the needs of the church. And he's done so many important positions. It must have said to the other cardinals, this is a man that we can trust, who will carry forward the things from Francis that we really admire and want to see carried forward, but will do so in his own idiom, in his own style, in his own voice, in his own way. And I have to say, I think the church is really eager to see how he's going to do that, the gift he's going to give, the way he's going to continue to breathe life into this living entity that is the Roman Catholic Church.
And picking up on Father's point, too, I think the fact that, you know, the Pope was selected to be in this position, you know, having been a man who was connected in relationship to all these various countries and selecting bishops, that maybe he was sort of a common reference point for the cardinal electors, that maybe more people knew him and trusted him than others. I also think the choice of Leo as a regnal title, he wanted to carry on. Yeah,
I was going to ask about that. And what does that say to you, that he chose the name Leo?
Well, it says, I believe he chose to be Leo the 14th because Leo the 13th is best known for an encyclical entitled Rerum Novarum, a revolutionary change. And the encyclical was really about workers throughout the world and how, you know, employers and capitalists, et cetera, have responsibility to the people who actually invest their labor for the prosperity of, you know, companies, corporations, countries, et cetera. And so I think he could have been Francis II, but maybe that's a little too close,
Zoom.
Knowing he can't. Or maybe an act of humility, admiring Pope Francis so much, I'm not going to pretend to be Francis II, but being devoted to Catholic social teaching, right, and to solidarity with the poor, I'm going to remind people of the role of Leo the 13th and become Leo the 14th.
By all accounts, too, he's very temperamentally different than Francis, right? I mean, he's much more of, he speaks very carefully, he's very careful in his thoughts, he's very moderate, he's not very emotional. So I think that may be another reason. I think you're right, he's absolutely trying to follow.
And Paula, you also mentioned that he is an Augustinian, and we know that he was a part of that order. Tell us about that order. What does that indicate about his experience and how he might lead?
Well, I mean, Augustine was a great 4th century bishop. He was also a great theologian. He was a great theologian of the will. And so not a mystic. I mean, it is a more intellectual order, but it's also, I don't think, as much of a mystical order as, say, other orders. I can't think of Carmelites. That's what I was thinking of.
Thank you.
I say the Carmelites. So it's an order of work and an order of great thought, I think, as well.
I think it's worth noting that he was from a religious order. So Francis, too, was a Jesuit, as we all know. And Francis appointed many bishops who were from religious orders as opposed to being people who rose through diocesan priesthood. So there's more of a sense of community, more of a focus on their charism or mission. I think you see a different kind of leadership from religious order bishops and priests.
Okay, so this feels really important. The White Sox have claimed him as a fan, as have the Cubs.
Right.
My joke around the office is that the Cubs are going to win because now they've got a main line to the big guy. But do you think either team might have a better season next year if they've got the Pope in the pocket?
The White Sox are going to need a lot more prayers even from the Pope than the Cubs are. The Cubs are already rolling. If I was him, I would just pick the lead horse and ride that. But really, I'm sure you all saw as well, Jay Wright from Villanova, many other people from the Big East Conference are like, hey, this is our guy. Yeah. We now have, not only does Villanova have two national titles in the last 15 years, they also have a Pope as an alumni.
Oh,
this is amazing.
So, right. I know. All right, well, we'll have to leave it there. My thanks to Father Patty Gilger, Paula McWade, and Heidi Schlumpf, and Scott Alexander. Thanks to all four of you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Up next, two men who were on Illinois' death row. Talk about former Governor George Ryan.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Funeral services were held this afternoon for former Illinois Governor George Ryan, who died last week at 91 years old. The single-term Republican leaves behind a complicated history. He spent 5 years in federal prison after being convicted of fraud and bribery charges, among other actions, during his term as Secretary of State. However, while in the governor's mansion, Ryan commuted the death sentences of 167 men on the state's death row in 2003. The move eventually led to a moratorium and abolition of the death penalty in Illinois. Joining us now are two of those former inmates who Ryan removed from death row. Ronaldo Hudson, who spent 37 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections and is now the Director of Education at the Illinois Prison Project. And Stanley Howard, who served 39 years in prison and was later exonerated of murder charges. He is co-founder of the Death Row 10 and co-author of the book Tortured by Blue, the Chicago Police Torture Story. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ronaldo, let's start with you, please. You said that you had mixed feelings when your death sentence was commuted under then-Governor Ryan. Why was that?
Well, it's because I was able to see on death row, you had immediate access to lawyers. And once you went to the general population, those conditions are just eliminated. You become a number in a crowd of people that has been just dismissed and sorry for you. Whereas with the death penalty, you have automatic appeals. And so that was one of the things. Then also just thinking about how hard it is to think about never having hope of ever being released. That just was hard to just process. And so many people continue to face that.
Because your sentence was commuted from death to life, basically. So now you have no hope of release because you're sentenced to spend life, the rest of your life in
prison. Absolutely. And that was like a struggle for me. Someone who had acknowledged my harm. And so that's the other thing. One of the things that I can appreciate about the governor is that he wasn't just dealing with the innocence issue. He was dealing with a broken system that was even unjust to those of us that had caused harm. And so it's really complicated, but it's important to discuss.
Stanley, you said that you had a sense of relief when you were exonerated, but you still continued to serve a separate conviction, 39
yes.
years in
yes.
total. What
yes.
was that like for you? And to be clear, that conviction was for armed robbery
yes.
of two Chicago police
yes.
officers.
Yes. I spent 39 years of incarceration. I spent 20 years or more of incarceration after I was pardoned by Governor Ryan. I end up was pardoned with three other individuals, Aaron Patterson, Leroy Owens, and Madison Hobley. I should have went home that particular day also, but instead I stayed another 20 years in prison. It was horrible. I'm glad that Governor Ryan took the action that he took because he not only saved my life, but he also saved a lot of lives that was also really in jeopardy of facing what I call legal lynching today.
You and do you still have a claim of innocence on that other crime?
Yes,
which you
I am still appealing that case right now, where I still have one of John Burris' crooked cops claim I gave him an oral confession. And that case is still on appeal right now today.
Okay. Ronaldo, we often talk about death row in the abstract. Most of us have no clue what it's like. What can you tell us about what death row was like?
Yeah, you know, thank you. Like, that is a really important question. And it's like, imagine someone taking a revolver, they call it Russian roulette, and every day you wake up wondering, will the trigger be pulled? You know, during my stay on death row, 12 people went to their execution, and they would walk those men past us. And it was so hard, because what do you say to someone? It's one thing to, you know, a broken, drugged out act, and you do some harm. It's something to see something so clinical, so clean, so mechanical, but does the ultimate harm. And so emotionally, it was just hard to say, how do you say goodbye to someone walking by saying, I'm about to die? And so I always, to this day, I can still hear some of those goodbyes. And it's been a lot of years, and it's still echoing.
Right. And you say all of that with the knowledge that that'll be you one day, or that the intention was for me,
because the thing that I always tell people is what sobered me wasn't the sentence of death. What sobered me is when I woke up to my harm, and I was like, man, I now know the depth of what it feels like to be guilty. And for a system to say their punishment of me is to do what they told me it's so bad to do. And so I was like, okay, do that mean that I don't care? In fact, I cared enough to start to change my life in a way that I said, okay, if I'm going to die, then I'm going to make sure I at least learned what forgiveness felt like and what it looked like versus simply, I'm just going to be exterminated. I wanted to have some value. I wanted someone to care that I was being eliminated off of the earth. And so many people don't get that.
Stanley, you've said that you formed relationships with other men on death row. What were those like, and why was that necessary?
Well, yeah, they were family to me. When I first got there, I was lost. I was a kid, 23 years old. And to be put inside of a cell 23, 24 hours a day for 16 years, I say that not only was I tortured by Chicago police, but I was also tortured by the state of Illinois. Because of the isolation, solitary confinement that I have to endure, I was mentally tortured. So I had older brothers that was there that was somewhat able to grab me and walk me through this process and hold me when I needed that holding hand. Family is who you are related to, but we build a family of a strong bond there, like my brother Rinaldo here, and I have many others that we still left behind with natural life sentences. And when I found out there was other torture survivors there also, it really hit home. Yeah.
Rinaldo, you've been out of prison since 2020, which is when Governor Pritzker granted your clemency application. Did you ever get to form a relationship with Governor Ryan?
I didn't. I had a, and this may sound really weird, I have to share this. I had this kind of mixed kind of feelings about Governor Ryan. And I'll be honest with you, today, it's like it landed with me, the weight of the decision that he made, if that makes sense. When I was in the midst of my own stuff, like you can have what's called tunnel vision. And so I have to admit that I was wallowing in that. And when I sat there and listened to his heart being shared through the people that was the closest to him, I really melted. You know, the yesterday began to melt away because I'm like, wow, like imagine having that responsibility to carry that out, the ultimate act legally. And the saying, man, I don't want to be this person. And I was like, man, I don't want to be the person that caused the harm. So imagine being the person to say, I'm going to, you know, execute you. And when I heard his family share his heart, it just melted me, you know, and I don't know if that's too personal, but it just really felt appropriate to be there to honor someone that saved, to Stanley's point, who saved so many people's lives. Yeah.
As we mentioned, he had his own complicated history and ended up spending time in prison, federal prison himself, for fraud and racketeering charges. Stanley, how do you think that'll factor into his legacy?
I hear people talk about that all the time. But if you look at the facts and what was going on with the criminal justice system, which is still going on now today, and this is why I put together that Blue Ribbon Commission, they discovered that the system was corrupt, unjust, unmerciful, and also in deep need of reforms. Reforms that the legislators, the General Assembly, refused to even implement after they come forth with these recommendations. I hear people talk about what happened with the Willits family. I feel for them. But Governor Ryan had nothing to do with that. And we're going to start prosecuting politicians for horse trading. So in my opinion, we might as well dig up George Washington and all the rest of them because it's all about this.
Yeah.
And
Well,
I wish I would have had a billionaire friend.
Illinois certainly has a history of them.
Yes.
And we know this, and hopefully we've got some good ones who are at work now.
Yes.
And we won't be covering on more corruption in Illinois, but that is where we'll have to leave it. 76 years incarcerated between the two of you, and you're doing different work today. Rinaldo Hudson and Stanley Howard. That's where we'll have to leave it. Thanks to you both. We're glad you're here.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Brandis.
And that is our show for this Thursday night. You can stream Chicago Tonight on our WTTW YouTube channel every evening and catch up on any programs you may have missed. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 7 for the Week in Review. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that serves the needs of clients in the Chicago area and throughout the nation.